Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io. And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle. Matt DeCourcy here to have another conversation I'm hoping helps your business grow. So we've had so much stuff that is remote. We've got remote work, remote school, remote investing, which is what we're going to talk about today. And everything's remote. The world got so small because the internet got so big. Going to get into that and so many more things today. Before I introduce today's guest, today's episode of Startup Hustle is powered by Fullscale.io. Hiring software developers is difficult, and Fullscale can help you build a software team quickly and affordably, and has the platform to help you manage that team. Visit Fullscale.io to learn more. If you're unaware, that's my business, and we love talking to Startup Hustle listeners. When you go to Fullscale.io, it takes like 2 minutes to fill out the form and let us match you up with people that can help you build tech. With me today, I've got Johnny Wolf, and Johnny is the CEO and founder of Homeroom, and that's a real estate tech company. You can go to Live. Do we say Live or Live, Johnny?
It's Live Homeroom.
That tells you how my memory is working today. But straight out of my hometown of Kansas City, Missouri, Johnny, welcome to Startup Hustle.
Matt, so happy to be here, man. It's really cool to see Startup Hustle out of the KC ecosystem. Been watching what you've been doing for a while, and it's an honor to be on your show.
Well, I appreciate you coming. You've done the city well with your success and your support. And for those of you that are unaware, Homeroom's a Y Combinator backed residential real estate marketplace that simplifies remote investing and streamlines affordable renting. And, you know, with that, Johnny, why don't we start today's conversation with a little bit about the backstory of what brought you to where we're at livehomeroom.com.
At Live Homeroom. Yeah. So, I started my career in the Silicon Valley in 2007 and started remote real estate investing in 2008. Bought a home in Midland, Texas, home of Friday Night Lights, and worked for some startups and some tech companies in finance, financial planning, forecasting, strategy. Around 2015, I realized that, as kind of a lot of us have realized, housing was getting way more unaffordable every day. And I was getting my career is progressing, but I was like, when am I going to be able to buy a house in San Francisco? And it's like, maybe never. So I pivoted and I had worked at some startups. I was excited about it, but really I wanted to get into real estate investing because I saw that as like an avenue for me to kind of like jump up wealth wise so I could eventually live with my friends, buy a house in the close by. So I moved to Austin 2015 and did real estate investing basically full time. I bought a home, a lot of leverage, and ended up renting out each room individually because I could get more rent, about 50% more than I would have gotten if I rented out as a single family home. So I ended up doing that two more times in Austin. And so I had a little portfolio. I was running my own properties and I shared how it was going. It was a little crazy, roommate housing is a little different, I guess you could say. But the returns are really good. And some of my friends in the Bay are like, how do we do this? Because it seems like it's a great idea. And I said, I no idea, man. Good luck. Around 2018, I realized like, hey, I want to move to Kansas City. I think the ecosystem there is, you know, I'd heard good things. I think it's a good ecosystem for real estate investing. And so I came here to do more real estate investing for myself. But it kind of dawned on me, well, what if I kind of combine my startup background, technology, product experience, and this real estate investing piece and offer it to other people so they can buy homes and rent them out remotely. So that led to me starting Homeroom in 2018. And here we are today. We've seed funded, Y Combinator backed. We've built a really good team. We're in 11 different metros in the United States. And so now we enable real estate investors to buy these homes from anywhere in the country and in the world. We do podcasts globally now as well.
Interesting. So yeah. with what you guys are doing at Homeroom, now just to clarify this, because we unpacked a lot of stuff there. And yeah, that frustration of living in those expensive markets is real. You know, having we have clients and guests and, you know, people that say, oh, you're in Kansas City. And they're like, what's that like? I'm like, it's cheap.
It's affordable.
Yeah. It's affordable is a better word. I like the word affordable. Yeah, I'm catching myself on my own crap there because it's not necessarily cheap. It's not like brittle and going to fall over. But compared to there's some things in San Francisco that might be brittle and fall over that you'll still pay millions of dollars for, and that's a struggle.
Yeah, I mean, I bought my house in Kansas City for under $200,000, right? Yeah. And so like in the Bay at the time, if you're looking at 1.5, you know. No, so
you can't find a closet for $200,000. So
you can't.
All right. So when it comes to, you know, when we talk about the remote investment piece of this, like, so clarify this for me. So you've got the ability to lease a room, lease a house, or invest in a property. What's the convenience or what's the benefit of using Homeroom as opposed to me just going and buying a place and renting it out?
Yeah. A friend of mine, who runs a similar company, or he says, you know, anyone can do this, but most people probably have better uses of their time. Right. So, you know, there's a number of things that someone in a marketplace like ours that does better, right. We are able to attract tenants at a super high velocity, right. So your property will perform better. We have 24/7 a leasing team globally. They're always on. We also have a proprietary technology platform that will actually allow people to self-check out of their leasing process. So that is the demand side of the marketplace that we're creating. And then, so if you come in as a supply side, being the property investor, someone with a home, your property is just going to perform a lot better. And generally, we're going to pay for ourselves, right? And so you're going to have way less stress and make more money, which is a pretty good deal.
Yeah, I've had, you know, over the years, I've had a lot of, I've owned rental homes. It's been a long time. I mean, I did all right with them because I'm old enough at this point that I had them before what most people call the housing bubble in 2007 and 2008. So, you know, I bought some, kind of levered into a couple houses and managed to sell. They doubled in value over like 3 years. I was like, wow, okay, I should sell now because I didn't feel it was sustainable and it wasn't. And haven't really gone back to that space for some of the reasons that you mentioned, because, you know, there's I think that real estate investing is very accessible to a lot of people, and it's a great way to create a lot of wealth, especially over, you know, it's that OPM, other people's money kind of factor. But, you know, for me, when I look at myself and I'm busy, I got 10 million things going on. And then, you know, it's not as much as like the hey, here's the house, you want to rent it, here's the paper, sign it. It's the shit that goes on in the middle, man. You know, like my faucet's broken, my back door's, you know, the sprinkler broke or the house flooded or something like that. And, you know, I have a hard time even keeping up with that stuff at the house that I live in, much less the responsibility of needing to do it for people that, you know, are renting. So that's pretty cool. Now,
yeah, you know, no one wants more chores, right? It's like,
right,
when you get into investing, you kind of want it to be quiet, like just... Right. Make more money.
Well, for real estate investing. Yeah. I think when it comes to you talk about like investing in startups and stuff like that. And myself and a lot of other people on this show are, I'm in, and I've done more investment and stuff like that. But, if it's something I don't understand or can't add any value to, I pass every time because I just, it's, you know, it's like not really my strong suit. So there's a lot of opportunities out there. Now with that, you know, you mentioned, let's talk about YC a little bit because, you know, what was that process like? I think a lot of people will find that to be interesting.
Yeah, it's a whirlwind. I think, you know, I think, you know, people ask like, is it a good idea to do YC to me, you know, every once in a while on LinkedIn? And the answer for me is always a resounding yes. Obviously pretty difficult to get into, but you know, the whole, to get in, you've got to fill out a form, then you've got to do an interview. And it's like an 8-minute interview. We have to pitch your startup to like Mike, you know, the head of YC or one of the partners. And that process of preparation, I think, is good for any startup, right? I think our startup got way better just prepping for YC because we didn't get in the first time we applied. We got in the second. And so the preparation got us to think about metrics that matter. And like, this is, you know, investors have metrics they like, and usually for darn good reason. And so you start to fill out those forms. Techstars is similar, you know, and you're like, oh, okay, maybe I should start pointing this direction. So I'd recommend everyone try to get into Accelerator, even if you're like, choose not to get in, even if they offer it to you. Getting in was like a startup summer camp, like on steroids. It was so fast. You know, you're basically, it's a 3-month program. You have a couple hundred batchmates. You get to make cool connections. They are presenting to you constantly. And we were a bit later stage than the typical startup. We had a bit more revenue. So we were going to try to raise at a pretty lofty seed round valuation. So there was like fundraising prep, basic startup prep. You got to like hear from like the Airbnb founders, all these. So it was a lot of really cool pieces. And it takes like a month or two after you're done to process all of what you experience. But the best part is the relationships you keep, right? You know, we're in a Slack group with our YC prop tech group folks. So we like chat all the time about the crazy real estate market, and we support each other when Silicon Valley Bank had the issues. And so that's really, I think, the biggest value is connecting with really folks that are kind of in a similar stage as you.
Had you, my notes show that you've raised a couple million dollars in capital. Did that come after YC?
We've raised six. We just haven't really announced, we didn't announce our seed round publicly. So
did some of that come after YC though?
Yeah. During the YC, it's pretty cool. They basically have demo day, which is pretty, widely known. So they recommend you raise before demo day because it kind of creates like this urgency and a time box for investors. We raised 4 million in about 3 weeks. Before demo day and demo
day. Follow up with that is that, well, I think that kind of answered it because a lot of, you know, one of the things that I've talked to a lot of early stage people, and you mentioned kind of like, where's your startup at? I think you're spot on with the fundraising and just even the presentation process about your business. So one of the things that I do locally is I'm actually Startup Hustle is involved with the Kansas City Economic Development Corporation. And, you know, that's gone through some pivots and changes over the years, but they have a demo day of sorts, and they're currently giving grant recipient, you know, giving, they give out $50,000 grants. And I work with those grant recipients to help them get their 1-minute elevator pitch down. And bro, they show up and hey, for any of y'all that are listening, this is out of love, but your pitch sucked when you showed up. Right. And so like a lot of that is, you know, and trying to correct that amongst like 5 to 7 companies in 2 hours is tough.
Oh, geez.
But, you know, but some of that is, you know, and so here's the thing is so you mentioned like 8 minutes is a lot of time, but 1 minute's nothing. And so people get up and they'll be like, hi, my name is Matt DeCourcy, and I'd like to thank everybody here for blah, 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 blah. And you just see everybody's eyes glaze over. They go back to the bar, you know, and it's like, and by the time you're through half of that, like you're through half of it. So, you know, you gotta really get people's attention right away. I think that fundraising process too is, it's almost kind of like getting roasted a little bit, you know, it can be brutal in that regard. You got to have some thick skin around it, but people are going to point out the open flaws that you often have. And I think it's good for people to hear that. And I think the thing that you really want to take out of that is you want to listen for, I always say, listen for the echo. And that means that, like, if the same thing, like at your business, whether you're giving a pitch to an investor or it's your clients or your users or your employees, when it starts to sound like an echo, whatever that feedback is, that's probably what you should be addressing. And that can, that can be a
And I was actually, it's kind of funny. I was talking to my sister yesterday. She just started a business. She's doing interior design and construction, kind of remodeling work for people in Tennessee. And she was saying, you know, I showed it to someone and they were very critical. And I was like, you know, welcome to, I was like, oh, I'm sorry. But also like, welcome to business, because, you know, the iterative process of getting, and YC starts, they start with a two sentence description. That's your first piece. So, and that took us 4 freaking weeks of the partners telling us it sucked, like publicly. You have to read it every week to your group. Then they'd be like, that was garbage. Like,
can you
be like,
you say stens or sentences?
Two sentences. Sentences.
So ours those could be your sens as well.
Who are your two sens? Who are your two sens? Yeah. So it's ours is we help investors buy remotely and rent out each room separately. And they make 50 and so like that's like the gist of what our two sentence description became. But it took like 2,000 critiques, and to the point that one of the partners like, you guys just need to figure this out, right? They're very patient. They work with you, but at some point they're like, you guys just need to get in a room and figure this out. And, you know, as an English minor, right? So it's not like words are, I'm not super amazing, but I'm, super amazing is not good words, but, it's funny after I said it. So, the iteration around the clarity of what you do and your main value prop is so important. And it feels like it should be quick, but it should take you a long time and a lot of effort. Cause if you can get that just right, your whole pitch, your whole seed round pitch, your whole VC pitch will go 1,000x better. So
I look at like the 5-year history I've got with Full Scale, and like I've spent a lot of time, effort, attention, shortening, you know, things. And that's kind of back to that advice I was saying about the people who are giving the elevator pitch. It's like, it was just too verbose, you know, it was like,
yes.
And the thing is like, you know, people, it's amazing how many people really struggle to explain what the hell it is they do. And, you know, and that's the thing. So like at Full Scale, we build software teams quickly and affordably. One sentence. You know, but dude, it took a little while to get down to that, you know, and then like some of it's also just having that confidence to understand that those are the words that describe what you do. And it really is like the more straightforward and descriptive you can be, because I'll tell you what, man, I've actually sat through people that pitching us for investment, and you 10 minutes, 12 minutes in, and finally you're like, so what do you do? You know, and that's what you're trying to do. That's really what you're trying to avoid. So.
I mean, it's your two sentence description and your first minute is your foundation for your whole pitch.
Yeah.
If people are lost,
yep.
Some VCs will just be like, I don't know what you do. YC will say that to you. I don't know what you do. Can you? Like, but polite people may not, and then they'll just zone out and like start thinking about like their vacation in Cabo in like 3 weeks.
I had a VC friend of mine say something to me once. He was like, I'm sitting through pitches. I'm like, how is that going? And he goes, if they get 10% of my attention right now, they're doing pretty well. But that's, it's a key point. Cause like, we're all like that as people. So lead with the need.
Yes.
You know what I mean? That is the number one thing that I tell the elevator pitch people, like lead with the need. Like you got to get someone's attention right away. It's the same thing with like, you know, the hook on your social media or the chorus of a cool song, but you got to get people's attention. And, you know, like, I'd take a stab at like what you do. I'd be like, have you ever wanted to be a rental homeowner, but you're frustrated with the process of managing the tenants or filling the units? We have a solution for that. You know, something like that is
not bad.
If I'm interested, that's at least now I'm listening. But if you make someone go through a bunch of babble and dribble on the way to that, their eyes glazed, 10% at best of the attention, and it's just really tough. And then
we ended up distilling it down to, we help investors make 50% more rent. Real estate investors make 50% more rent. And so like it kind of like sets the stage, like, okay, we should pay it. Right? So you kind of set the hook, you explain it with that second description I already said. And then you're kind of like ready to go, right?
Yeah.
Now people want to unpeel the story of what you do. It's so hard to let go, though. You want to put more information in. You feel like more information is better, right? I think that's a classic fundraising deck, pitch deck, messaging concept, is you just try to put more in. Maybe more will get me more impact. The truth is, you want to peel everything away except for the five things that make the most impact, but there should be nothing else, right? And so that's the most difficult part, is honing it all the way down into basically nothing but the very most important stuff. So
yeah, and then, you know, another thing too with whether it's to an investor, and especially when you're talking to prospects, clients, or users, you got to remember that people buy the benefits of what your product or service offers, not the features. The features are secondary, and features don't mean anything.
No.
Unless you, and so I always just say FAB, features, advantages, benefits. If you mention a feature, you need to, what's the advantage of that? And don't assume that people know. Don't assume that whoever you're talking to actually just gets it. Because, you know, I just went through the same thing yesterday. I was talking to our head of software development, and we were talking about GitHub's Copilot, which is, you know, an autocomplete, and he mentioned something to me, and like we were focused on like three key ingredients for basically like speed, quality, and, you know, like accuracy. And he said, yeah, and this also would make someone that isn't super experienced. See, I'm using super experienced. Those are great words, John.
You super put them together,
it's powerful as hell, man. But yeah,
we're talking about clarity and simplicity of language. Yeah. It's harder in free form, right? It's harder.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, that's what we're conversating. Hey, for anyone listening, if you don't like today's show, we'll give you your money back. There you go.
We'll give it all back.
We've had a money back guarantee here at Startup. We haven't had anybody take us up on it yet. But yeah. So, but with that, like he pointed out, and he said, well, this could also make people more versatile. And I was like, whoa. Mm. And I hadn't even considered that. So like, you get it, you look at like developers and all the myriad things that they need to do. And, you know, it's hard to find, if you have five things in your tech stack, here's the thing, unless they are the five most common things out there, and then it's still hard to find one person that's good at all of them. So if you can fill in those little gaps, I was like, oh, wow, that really made a lot of sense. So, but it was by describing the benefit, even do people with subject matter expertise, it's important. So don't assume that people know the benefit of what you're doing. Now, I will tell you a benefit of going to fullscale.io is that we make finding expert software developers not that difficult, especially when you go to fullscale.io, you just have to fill out a couple minutes worth of questions, and our platform matches you up with available testers, developers, leaders, whole lot of stuff. We make it fast, simple, and affordable. Fullscale.io. While you're in the show notes clicking that, click the livehomeroom.com link as well. Now, Johnny, you know, we're talking about the future of remote investing. Why do you believe that you're going to lead us into that? What's the benefit other than the 50%?
50% more rent isn't enough for you, Matt? Come on.
I'm paying attention. 10%.
All right. That's all I needed.
I'm at 19 and a half.
I'm double what needs to happen, right? So, you know, our two value props are really, you're going to make more money, right? Which is in investing, usually a good thing. And the other one is going to be stupid simple, right? And so you're going to be able to come in and we'll walk you the full process. We'll connect you to the lender, insurance. We'll connect you with everything, right? As well as the real estate agent in the field. We also have a data science team, and we'll do the underwriting on the deal, right? When you're renting out rooms, there's no national database of kind of. So, you know, we've kind of built out this whole thing to maximize returns and kind of shore it up and built data and tech all around it. So, but I mean, if zooming out, kind of like looking at just real estate investing generally, you know, one of the things I did in like 2014, before I moved to Austin, 2015, I was like saying, okay, I'm kind of in a hole. I'm not, you know, I don't have enough money to buy this house. There's a wealth gap for me personally. And the question is, how do I bridge that gap? So as a finance person, I ran numbers on stocks, you know, crypto, although that might've been a good idea. So maybe I missed there, real estate. And I found that from a risk adjusted basis, that real estate was the pound for pound best performer if you're using leverage and good interest rates, right? Because it's had a massive track record of increasing in value. And then you can lever it up with the down payment 5 to 1, right? So it ends up making your returns much better in the stock market, but also much more predictable. So a lot, it's finance based. We layer on a model that makes you make more money, and then we make it really easy for investors. So that's really kind of Homeroom's kind of mission and kind of what we're doing.
You didn't use this phrase, but you're selling my favorite intangible benefit, which is peace of mind.
Mm.
Like, you know, and so I'm a couple years away from being 50 at this point. I'm not old, I'm experienced, right? But I've really learned as a salesperson and a builder of businesses that when you can deliver peace of mind, like, dude, it's somewhat priceless, you know, because without peace of mind, nothing else has much flavor. And, you know, that's, there's an element to that in any product or service offering. If it's there, it makes it sticky. It's like sticky. Cause you know, if you think about it, and like, I think that at certain points in all of our lives, we're like, oh, cool. You know, 50% sounds great. I love that. That's an awesome return. But realistically, if I lose peace of mind to get it, I'm not buying. Right.
Yeah, I would have to come home early from vacation you know, I'd be checking my phone every day to make sure that you know, my portfolio didn't crash, you know? Yeah.
Right. So some of that, you know, so like with that peace of mind, and that's where I think a lot of like, quote, like managed services type companies and things that streamline stuff like Live Homeroom and all that is like, you know, is important. And, you know, give you an example. I have 300 employees in the Philippines, and I went and so I'm there like 6 to 8 weeks a year. I'm tired of staying in hotels. I looked at buying a condo in the IT park where we're at. And one of the guys that I work with over there was like, well, dude, you could Airbnb it when you're not around. And I was like, nah. He's like, why not? I was like, because over there that'd be like 40 bucks a day. And I'm like, it just doesn't feel worth it. You know, sure. Like that could destroy my peace of mind. Like I need a couple more zeros to trail in that transaction. And, you know, so that wasn't really that, but if that could be out of touch, out of sight, out of mind, I know some people that do that with different rental properties where they're just kind of hands off on it. And, you know,
yeah. I mean, it's really like a psychology of investing or psychology of money, right? Like, There's the pure numbers view of how much money you put in, how much money you get out, right? But if you don't include the human aspect, like I think in any sort of product or service that is offering returns, I think you're missing a big component, right? And we actually run into that a lot with investors. There's a lot of people we talk to that are like, the idea of buying a property hundreds of miles away sounds like a terrible idea. Like, what if something goes wrong, right? It just seems intuitively complicated. Also, houses have like a lot of parts. Right. And so, but we know the numbers of real estate are really good. Right. I think generally people think if you ask someone on the street, like, is real estate a good investment? Most people would be like, yeah, I think it's like pretty much. Yeah. Universally. Yeah. But like,
eventually,
maybe not in 2007, but it's really like, how do you maximize it? And then how do you make it easy? Right. And like, so that's really like the two things that we're trying to tackle. And we have very little peace of mind at all because we're in the trenches every day. We have like 1,300 roommate tenants and that's bananas. But like the goal is that all that noise just gets like completely quelched. And then the investor just gets like money. And then they just are like, great. And that's it. Like if they have any questions, they send it to us. Our nice chippy, you know, success team. It helps them like answer questions. Right. And so that's crucial. I think it's really, really important, especially in real estate, which is complicated, or anything else that's pretty dynamic and has a lot of pieces like that. So, yeah, in your case, people are making investments in software, right? And so it's a dynamic thing to manage an engineering team. And so in a way, you're doing something very similar.
Well, the peace of mind we saw at Full Scale is, you know, like here's the reality is there are, if you're going to hire, so there's this huge shortage of software developers in the United States. And as entrepreneurs, we will go find what we need wherever it is that we need to go find it. And if that happens to be offshore, which here's the thing, man, there are smart, talented people worldwide. You got to know how to find them and then create a culture that keeps them around. And so we only hire about one in 35 applicants. So people will, and we're pretty upfront, like we're not the cheapest solution because we're not cheap. We don't do cheap things. So we're affordable. You know, that's why we shouldn't have used the word cheap earlier, but like affordable is like people use these words interchangeably and they are very, very different. So like the peace of mind that you get when you hire full scale is that we got rid of the 34 candidates you didn't want. And dude, we are disciplined about that. Like, I mean, if it's even a borderline is a no. Like there's no, like we don't squeeze the strike zone outward, you know? And so some of that is, and so that's a peace of mind. And then also, like you mentioned, like buying a property that's really far away. We have management and other things that go on in the background that, I don't know, man, if your clients can't be successful using your services, then you're not going to be successful. So you got to focus on that. And that's a really important thing. It's the same thing with like with apps. Like you talk about peace of mind, and then some people build software that's confusing as hell to work. Like I'm just an onboarding nut. Like, that's why you hear me. I'm like, dude, you really can go to fullscale.io, click hire developers, and it, you can get through that in under a minute. I say 2 minutes because if you're slow, but yeah, you know, but that's the thing.
You don't want to make people feel bad if they take, you know, minute 45.
Yeah, you will race through and you're in there, but people want things like it, we're in this like reels and stories microwave culture now. And, you know, like Amazon started changing that game and it's same day deliveries. I ordered something last night at 10 PM and it was on my porch this morning. I was like, whoa, that's creepy. Really fast. I don't even think I mean, it was fast. You know what I had to order? I have all weird shit. So I had to order 3 owl decoys. Like owls. Yeah. At my dad's house, there is apparently a large bird of prey that is catching things in and around the pond near the golf course that he lives on. And there are like carcasses on his deck. Like there's it's the weirdest thing, bro. There's like a giant catfish skeleton. I'm like, what? Yeah. So apparently you got to put up owl decoys.
I mean, God bless Amazon. Cause like, I don't know where you'd go to get an owl decoy if you had to otherwise.
Probably right? Shields. I think might be a good place.
You're probably right. You're probably right about that. Yeah. But it wouldn't be like, yeah, definitely a sporting goods store.
I don't know if they have owls. They might have ducks and everything else. Yeah, I found a duck carcass too. I'm like, this has got to stop. So yeah. Anyway, I digress. So by the way, if you are renting out homes or doing anything with that, make sure you don't end up with all the things I just described on your deck. It's probably not good for business.
Maybe you just add a fake owl to every rental property.
I bought three. That's the way I roll, bro. I wasn't going to get one. I'm going to put like a whole team of those things up and see what happens.
I had a note about what you were talking about outsourcing talent. I think, and it sort of ties into the way you talked about software engineers using HubSpot Copilot and making it more versatile. I think we use a lot of overseas talent. We have a team in the Philippines. This has been our biggest team, fairly large team in Argentina. Mm-hmm. We have some team members in Venezuela and Mexico. So it's a, you know, pretty, Europe and Middle East. And our engineers are in Vietnam. So we're kind of global. One thing we're seeing that's like pretty magical is that OpenAI is actually making our employees who are all pretty good at English, like suddenly able to do customer facing messaging.
Yeah.
It's making them more versatile. So you basically bridge a gap where we know the skills are at a super high level, but there's the challenge is sort of like, you got to like process it through a management layer with, you know, native fluency to make it clean and clear sometimes. Well, now that like is sort of changing, and so it's making that globalization, I think it's moving it even faster. So I think it's a very, very cool thing. It's exciting to see, you know.
And we're big believers. And so when we went and set up Full Scale, one of the things that was that echo that we heard was that people were working at places where they're doing uninspired shit. They were using terrible equipment. And they just didn't really like, they weren't really treated that well. So like that, I mean, it was so obvious. So we just did the opposite. you know, and like, and if you are wanting anybody, whether it's a software developer or a carpenter or a bricklayer or anyone to build you something of quality, you need to give them the right tools. And, you know, and you look at like OpenAI, like that's why we're sitting there like testing Copilot, because here's the thing. And for those of you that might not be familiar, like a missing semicolon in your code can break your shit. I mean, right. It can be that simple. Like, and I'll go back over the years. I've been building software and stuff for a long time. And I'm like, what was the problem? And they're like, oh, there's an error on line 6093 missing semicolon. I'm like, what? You know, and so some of those things, you look at those tools to make people like, you know, do it faster, higher quality. And then like, yep. And that subcategory of that accuracy. And then there's a level of confidence too. Cause you know, like, if you've ever been around software developers, if they're not confident about what they're about to push, they're sitting there going, should I push this? And, you know, because they don't want to let things down. But there's that. And by the way, all the things that I just mentioned are peace of mind. They really are. They really are. So, yeah. And you're right about like the OpenAI, like just that, you know, so Google Translate. I've traveled all over the world to many of the places that you mentioned as well. And like Google Translate, people ask me, they're like, are you going to learn to speak Filipino? First off, Filipino isn't a language. That's not what they call it. But probably not. Cause you know, like, I mean, there's all these tools that make it, you know, like you can put the Google Translate on the camera of your iPhone. I think it's probably I'm assuming on Android as well, but you can hold it up at a sign. I was in Belarus holding that shit up at signs. And I was like, whoa, it was like, you know, telling me what it said in English. And that, you know, that's important. And if you can't communicate, if you want to, you talk about remote anything, if the lines of communication are crap, then the output's probably going to be crap.
Yeah. Cause our, you know, I was writing a note back to one of our lead engineer in Vietnam, and I just threw it in ChatGPT and also told it to him and the team in Vietnamese, because he can speak English very well, but the team can't. And so, and our CTO speaks both. And so he was like, that was pretty money. And I was like, yes. So it's also helping me, right, to kind of communicate better. So in both directions, like language barriers are falling, coding language barriers are falling. So it's pretty exciting stuff.
Yeah. And it's funny because people say, oh, is this going to replace software engineers? I mean, that is a long way away if that ever happens, because it's not I love the idea of the speed and the accuracy of the code coming out, because like, you know, being able to produce models, find libraries, answer questions, debug things, you know, a big thing is unit testing, you know, and things like that. Like, why don't software developers like writing unit tests? Well, it's just more code to write, and then you got to maintain it. And so like AI does a lot of the things that, you know, and so is machine learning, all this, that most people just don't want to do themselves. And we should thank it for that, because it's usually a lot of thankless crap. And
I mean, it basically is able to, you know, in kind of like the way that our CTO talks about it is like, if you're not a great writer, it's hard for you to generate code using Copilot and knowing if it's the code, the exact right code you need, right? So it can make someone that's good way more prolific and productive, but I think it can be, and it can help someone that's new, but it can't make someone that's new good and prolific, right? So there's still that skills gap where you have to understand what's happening underneath the surface. But I mean, man, we're using Copilot with all of our engineers, and the production is moving up, which is super awesome.
So yeah. And well, back awesome. To that peace of mind too. It's like, no one wants to push things live. And then you find, so we've had this rule, and I, because we provide services for so many companies, I can't make rules for them, but you don't push an update on a Friday. You know, it's just like, if you're listening, stop doing that. Cause it's a great way to ruin your weekend.
Tuesdays are good.
Yeah. Yeah. Tuesday, Wednesdays. Like those are like, yeah. So give yourself some time in there, but back to that peace of mind, you know, having things that debug and do a lot of different stuff. And there are, I like that versatility piece, you know, like I said, there's someone having a little more confidence in it. So, all right. So here we are at another episode of Startup Hustle that breezed right on by. Today's show is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Go to Fullscale.io. Once again, it only takes Johnny 1 minute and 45 seconds or less to fill out the form. Certified, yeah. Verified, maybe not. We'll see. Have you
filled out the form? I'll go test myself. I'm gonna break records, man.
There you go. I've had so many people do it in like moments because it's all about quick, easy. But you know, I like to end my episodes of Startup Hustle with founders and with the founder freestyle and give everybody a chance to say their closing remarks or statements. And, you know, Johnny, I guess it's time for that. And I will follow you up, sir.
Awesome, man. Yeah, I think, you know, one thing, that I kind of want to touch on real quick is just, you know, we talk about homeroom. It's like we're in, you know, all these places. And like the one part of the journey I kind of breezed right through was like 2018 to like 2021, right? Because it's like we got into Y Combinator in 2021. We raised money. All these things happened. But from 2018 to 2020, when, you know, it was an absolutely brutal grind. We basically had $120,000 that I took out of my personal retirement account. We burned through it in like 3 months. And then I just did it in my basement for a year and a half, right? With one other guy. So I think like if you're going to start something, there's the number of Instagram stories there are out there where it's like 12 months later to exit is just so few. And the number of times where you're going to be like at about 20 times where you probably should shut the business down are very high. And so I think it's really about like understanding that on the other side of like very close to failure can be like a much better time. And then then you have more tough times even after successes. So I think that's really like a crucial thing that I want to make sure that when I talk about all the good stuff and how great it is and whatever, it's like, it wasn't great most of the time. Right. So if you have a company now and you're feeling like, gosh, I don't want to keep doing this, you can make improvements every day and stack them up and you can be in a much better place in 2 years if you just stick to making improvements consistently over time.
Did you say you have a podcast as well?
Yeah, we have yes, we do.
What's it called?
Homeroom Investing.
There you go. I'm assuming you can find that all the places that podcasts are found.
Correct.
Which are many, 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 many.
There's a few.
Yeah. I think there's a few things to unpack here. I think we went over some important things when it comes to just the reality of like fundraising. And, you know, I'm going to go back. I don't want to just highlight my own shit, but I'm going to say that like the peace of mind thing is real. Like if you can figure out what part of your service or product, like whatever it does, whatever it is that you do, if it generates peace of mind, like find a way to focus on that, because that really will kind of melt the price objections away. I think you're 100% accurate with the, you know, you mentioned like the story, this dude, I don't know anybody that exits after 12 months. Like there's a couple people out there, and by the way, they're small when they do, they're pretty dinky exits. Like it's as far as things go, but you know, when it comes to building a company, it's just like, it's you're eating an elephant. You got to go after that thing one bite at a time and maybe start with the tail. You know, like just I think that we portray this Hollywood and social media a lot of times portray this like world of home run hitters that just get up and hit grand slams every time. Well, here's the thing, for someone to hit a grand slam, a couple other people had to get a base hit, maybe had to get hit by a pitch, had to get walked. And then, you know, then you get a chance to hit it out, but you got to get runners on base before you even hit a grand slam. And so much about entrepreneurship isn't home runs. It is sacrifice bunts and taking pitches and being patient on some days. And patience isn't exactly my strong suit, which can also be a benefit though. Can also be a benefit because as far as selling goes, like I'd ask for the sale. You know, I'm not sitting around and waiting 3 weeks for you to maybe get back to me when you forgot about me, you know, 20 days ago, because I didn't follow up quickly. So, you know, I think the main thing is just continue to work on getting the people involved with your organization, whether it's co-founders or employees or partners or anything that have you in mind and want to move things forward, like passion. And passion will wash away so much of the dreary feelings on many days. It's like an antidote for the ups and downs of entrepreneurship. And I think the last thing I'll put in there is, if you're thinking about starting a business or getting involved with one, if you're not passionate about it, I want to really, really encourage you to sit back and think about it for a while, because you'll probably quit. I mean, it's, you know,
yeah.
I talk about that in my book, Million Dollar Bedroom, that I call it the coin toss moment. Hey, let's just flip a coin and see if we're going to do this anymore. And you run into that with every business. Like, there's a moment where, you know, you kind of mention,
I would you're say like, a ton of moments.
Yeah. I have moments. A two-headed quarter for some of those, but you know, it's like at the same time, it's like there is that, yeah. That's a reality. And entrepreneurship isn't for everyone. It's brutal, dude. It has a lot of ups too. Sure. Like when you get it right and you're making a difference in your life, your employees' lives, your clients, users, whatever. And you know,
yeah, like,
that's a really good feeling.
Yes. Yeah, it's definitely orders of magnitude more fulfilling than work. Than working at a bank. Like that was my least favorite job ever. The money I made there was the most I ever made, and the benefit, everything was great, but like it was by the currency of fulfillment was super low, because it was just like, but in startup land the currency is usually low, but and eventually can get better, but the fulfillment I think can be really awesome, especially if it's something that you believe in. Like our secret formula to what we're doing is to provide affordable housing on the demand side, right? And so where the team is really passionate about that, and so it's fulfilling to feel like we're doing that. So I think that that's pretty special, but you know, it doesn't always pay the bills, and it definitely doesn't mean you don't go through moments where you're like, this was a huge mistake and I wish I could go back in time and just stay working at the bank sometimes. So, but
and that's where we're gonna end the show, man. I'll catch up down the road for an update. All right.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me, Matt. Appreciate it.
Startup Hustle's brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time. We do it.